This is the forgetting.
Life has to go on, and if you can't laugh at an enemy, the enemy owns you and intimidates you, and I'm not going to let this enemy intimidate me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have periods of time when I let my hair down, I cry, and then I get back up, and I just want to see more people marching, that's all. I was on the phone the other day with an Alzheimer's Association group, and there were 10 of us who could talk just like me. And there was anger on the phone about how people just do the drive-by. And Bob got the drive-by until he was on his way out. They'd look at him, hey, you look good, Bob, you look good. But no one wanted to look inside his head because that scared them. Until you're inside the mind of Alzheimer's, you really don't know what's going on. God love the doctors, the nurses, the researchers. They know the medicine. They know the Harvard stuff. But they're not inside the mind of Alzheimer's like those of us walking with it. And all of us now, a bunch of my friends, are pissed. And as a result, we're withdrawing. And that's bad.
From WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and from my brownstone apartment in Brooklyn, New York, this is The Forgetting, a podcast about dementia. I'm David Shank, author of the book The Forgetting and senior advisor to an international research consortium called Cure Alzheimer's Fund, which helps make this podcast possible. And with me, as always, is my friend and my co-host, Greg O'Brien, author of On Pluto, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. Greg's book has that subtitle because Greg has early onset Alzheimer's, and he's committed to reporting his experience for as long as he possibly can. That's why this podcast exists. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Dawn. How's it going, David?
I'm okay. I want to say that we are recording. This is episode 8. We're recording it on April 13th, 2017. It's been exactly 4 weeks since you and I last spoke. And I understand you lost a close friend who also has Alzheimer's, and I'd love for you to tell us about Bob.
Yeah, it was a tough week. You know, on this disease, some of your closest friends are men and women with Alzheimer's, and everyone's in different stages, and we've talked about this, and Bob had a lot of complications, and I'd like to talk about the courage of Bob, because Bob exemplifies the courage required to fight Alzheimer's, but also the courage to fight all sorts of diseases. And, you know, this week I focused back, and for some reason my attention, and I have some notes here which I'm looking at, focused my attention on a scripture from the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes that the storied rock group, the Birds, when they got religion in the 1960s, sung about. To everything there is a season. And, you know, today is a time of weeping for me. You know, Bob died at 78 this week. And, you know, he's a lanky, just to give you a little background, to paint a word picture, lanky young ball player when he was a young man who crouched behind home plate wearing the tools of ignorance. We were both catchers and talked about that a lot. He was a catcher in the Los Angeles Dodgers organization, and as you know, formerly from the Brooklyn Dodgers, your home. And Bob and I talked about wearing the tools of ignorance in Alzheimer's far beyond the running pass in baseball. And catchers stick together. So we would talk often, and we'd have coffee often. And Bob was afraid of dying. And we talked about it. And this was in a little bit in the earlier stages. And I think he got to the point where he became more comfortable with what was ahead rather than what was behind him and what was in the present. Bob suffered from Alzheimer's, in my notes here, Parkinson, Lewy body disease, you know, which is another form of progressive dementia. But he was just this great all-American guy. He was raised in Dover, Mass, outside Boston, in the working section of town called the Chicken Coop. You know, his mother sewed uniforms for Bob's neighborhood Little League team. He was a Boston University graduate, PhD in management, taught chemistry and performing arts at the private high school in Bath, Maine. He coached all sorts of teams. He also choreographed dancers with his high school students, and they performed on Broadway in the Kennedy Center. And here's a guy in his 40s who began to paint stunning oil and watercolors at age 62. He took up the violin. Diagnosed several years ago, he continued his challenge in life, joining support groups and working in his church and continuing his golf. And he was a man of strong faith, and his faith got stronger in his disease. You know, in the last days, he started reaching out to all of his friends, telling him that he loved them. And he had never, you know, Alzheimer's can bring you to that point where, like any serious disease, where you realize what's important. And Bob usually didn't use the word love. And he would just say, I love you, I love you. And shortly before he died, because catchers stick together, he confided to me, I'm telling all these guys I love them, Greg. Do you think I'm gay now? And I said, yes, Bob, we're all gay in the full reach of love and faith, and that's the way it should be, the freedom to love. And Alzheimer's teaches perfect love, and in heaven, you leave the stereotypes at the door. I got an email from Bob's wife after he met with the doctor, and the doctor said to him that if I were you, Bob, quote, go home and enjoy what time you have, watch more sunsets, listen to music, and be at peace. You've earned the right to enjoy these days without more pain. And Bob just passed away a couple of days ago. I was there, and I'm happy for him, okay?
Yeah.
But it's sad.
Yeah.
Any death is sad. I don't want to say that the death from Alzheimer's is any more sad than the death from cancer. That's just not true. But what we need to do with some of these other diseases, we're talking about it. And
right.
And even though we've made great strides in this, we don't want to talk about it. And we don't want to talk about it until we go to someone's wake, because it's a taboo and maybe it scares us. And I was on the phone the other day with an Alzheimer's Association group that I'm doing some research with, and there were 10 of us who could talk just like me. And there was anger on the phone about how people just do the drive-by. And Bob got the drive-by until he was on his way out. They'd look at him, hey, you look good, Bob, you look good. But no one wanted to look inside his head because that scared them. And nobody, you know, on our bad days, David and I have train wrecks, I'm home, you won't see me. Or after I do a show like this, you know, I'm drained, I go out. And I think all of us feel that if we showed, and I know we've talked about this before, but it's very important, if we're trying to get attention to get a creative mask to cure this disease, and all we did is walk around and show our train wrecks, then we'd get freaking pity. We don't want anyone's damn pity. We want this country to realize this is a disease more than cancer, and cancer is a horrific disease. And you know, David, I have cancer and I'm not treating it. So cancer is horrible, and AIDS and all the, you know, autism and all the horrific diseases that we have out there. But we're talking more about them, as we should. And I don't want a single cent spent less on any care for those diseases. And I want to walk in every parade for those diseases that I can, and I try to do. But damn it, I want to see people to start to talk about this disease before we're at someone's wake. And that's where we are now in a lot of places. I don't want to take anything away, and you got my Irish up here. I don't want to take anything away from all the good work that a lot of people have done. But it's not a majority point of view right now. We don't have a critical mass. And Bob's passing was very sad for me because I'm going to come up against that. I got cancer. I'm not treating that. And yet when I go down the street, people go, "Hey, you're a handsome Greg. You're a handsome guy, Greg. You look good." And can I say this? I feel like saying, "Fuck you." You know, look inside. You know, I'm trying to do the best goddamn way I can to try to teach you, but you don't want to hear about it until I can't talk. And then when I can't talk, I can't freaking tell you what this disease is about so it might educate you. Because until you're inside the mind of Alzheimer's, you really don't know what's going on. God love the doctors, the nurses, the researchers. They know the medicine. They know the Harvard stuff. But they're not inside the mind of Alzheimer's like those of us walking with it. And all of us now, a bunch of my friends, are pissed. And as a result, we're withdrawing. And that's bad because anger and withdrawal are symptoms of this disease. And when it gets exacerbated by other things, that's not a good thing if we're going to get to the finish line. And we ain't getting to the finish line unless we're inside the mind of Alzheimer's. And I'm sorry I got so mad. I don't know. It's just tough. Sorry.
Greg, I'm really sorry for your loss and my condolences to Bob's family and his friends. And as awful as that was, it was a delight in a way to just hear you.
I feel particularly after being there with Bob, holding his hand after he passed away, talking to him, knowing his spirit was still in the room. Then I have to tell you, talk about funny stuff. A lot of times I sleep on the couch because I'm up every 2 hours and my wife still has to work and I still have to work to the extent that I can and I don't want to wake her up. So I'm sound asleep at 4 o'clock in the morning and you have to coach me. The Google thing that you talk to or the Amazon thing you talk to and it tells you stuff. What is that? You know, the
Amazon Alexa is
yeah. And you have to say, I have a question to get it going or whatever it is.
Right.
4 o'clock in the morning, music starts playing and it's soft rock, the kind of music that Bob likes. And, immediately I woke up and we have our granddaughter with us that night. And I didn't want to wake her up, so I pulled the plug out. And as I did, something inside me said, "That's Bob."
Mm.
And I smiled, and I looked up at the sky, and I said, "Hey, Bob, nobody likes a show-off. I miss you, and I love you." So I don't know. I think we might have had an encounter of the third kind.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a believer in the afterlife, and I'm not a believer in God. And
well, I'm coming back to haunt you then, okay?
The reason I'm saying that is that to say the next thing, which is that I think extraordinary things happen to us all the time, and that's and we certainly can't explain them all, and it's part of the joy and richness of being alive when just stuff, crazy stuff happens, and it just, you know, it's a marvel. But Greg, I want to ask you a couple questions. I want to point out a couple things. In contrast to all the poetic things you just said about Bob and your relationship, just to get a couple of facts out there, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but Bob actually didn't die of Alzheimer's. He died of cancer, and he was, you know, sounds like he was about in the middle stages of Alzheimer's disease.
Well, the Parkinson's was, Bob had years left on him, I believe. The Parkinson's really impacted his ability to speak and his shaking and walking, but he died of cancer. He ultimately would have succumbed to the Alzheimer's, but
of course
he died of cancer. Yes.
Right. So and the Parkinson's makes it even more complicated. So let's just get, just for people who don't know this kind of basic stuff, you know, Alzheimer's is a disease that I think probably most listeners know, but it's very, very slow, very, very slow and steady. And it can go anywhere from, starting with diagnosis And of course, Alzheimer's, as probably most listeners know by now, actually starts long before diagnosis. But if we take the diagnosis point as a marker, the disease can last 10, 15, 20, or even more years to go through these many stages as the plaques and tangles progress throughout the brain. And
I think with my mother looking back at symptoms, it was 25 years.
Right. And the thought is that as we proceed along in history, generally speaking, the cases of Alzheimer's will last longer, reason being that we're a healthier people. People are generally just in better shape and living more robust lives, so they're able to live with the Alzheimer's that much longer. So what might have been a 10-year disease 100 years ago can be a 20 or 25-year disease. This is very generally speaking now. So because of that, and because almost everyone who gets Alzheimer's is either in late middle age or the vast majority being in their elder years, we're talking about a disease that quite often people will experience, but then something else will come along that's a quicker disease, like cancer is the quintessential example. And cancer will go from 0 to 60 in a year or two or 3 or 4 years, and the person will not get to the end of Alzheimer's, will not experience the final stages of Alzheimer's, which would indeed kill that person if they got there, but something else comes along and kills them quicker. And you talked about you yourself having cancer and not treating that. And the implication there is that you'd rather die, if I can just be blunt about it, you'd rather die from the cancer sooner than to try to beat the cancer somehow and to die later from the advanced stages of Alzheimer's disease. Is that fair?
No, it's do I want a 10-year prison term or a life term?
Right.
I want a 10-year prison term. I was there, saw my grandfather, saw my mother, was there with my... I've been in the front row seeing the end stage. And damn it, I don't want to take my family there.
Yeah.
I don't want to take... We're heading into bankruptcy right now. I've gone through all my resources. My finances are an open book. I do have a $1.3 million life insurance policy. And so do you think I want to take my family into bankruptcy when, if something else can take me out, at least they have something to pay the bills?
Right.
As opposed to looking at me like when I'm motionless and
yeah.
can't talk? I'm not doing that.
Right. And I wonder, we'll talk to your family and various family members in future episodes, but I wonder how each of them think about this to the extent that they're comfortable talking about it, because they may not feel exactly the same way as you. And of course, they may go back and forth. It's not like they have, this is a very hard, maybe the hardest question anyone has to face for themselves or someone in their family. Maybe they're ambivalent about how long they want you to live. There's of course a piece of every human being, vis-a-vis their loved one, that wants that person to live as long as possible.
Yeah, I mean, my instinct is to protect, and sometimes you can protect by not being there when you see the stage of this disease, where it's going.
Right.
And that's what separates Alzheimer's from a lot of the, again, I'll repeat myself again, I don't want to take anything away from the trauma and the tragedy of other diseases. But Alzheimer's is one, and there are other diseases that run a life course too. Look at autism. I have a nephew who is autistic, and God love him. He's my miracle boy. But Alzheimer's can take you out for 25 years. And Dr. Rudy Tanzi, who we've interviewed from the Cure Alzheimer's top researcher and from Harvard and Mass General, will tell you that before the symptoms are apparent, the pathology can start in your 40s. So holy shit.
Or even sooner, yes. And actually what we in the Alzheimer's research community are trying to, what we're talking about is we're actually trying to start a movement, if you will, to try to figure out how we want it to be more like cancer in its nomenclature, in the sense that we don't say that the cancer begins when someone has extraordinary pain. We say that the cancer begins when that very first cancerous cell starts to divide in a malignant way. Even if you right. can't detect it, that's when the cancer begins, is when that tumor, you know, the very first or second cell, rather, of that tumor begins. And Alzheimer's should be the same way. We really don't say that it's Alzheimer's in our current nomenclature until we have enough symptoms to yeah. you know to you know to say, well, on the scale of memory and so forth, you clearly have or you have very likely have Alzheimer's disease, even though the disease has been coming on for 10, 20, even 30 years. So what we want to do is we want to develop the tools, of course, to detect it way, way, way before you are having any symptoms. And the good news is that our best research on drugs so far has to do with this protein that we've talked about before called beta amyloid, which is among the very earliest things that's happening in the disease, and it's creeping into your brain, and it's accumulating in a kind of malignant rate, even though there is actually a healthy amount of beta amyloid you can have in your brain, but at some point in your middle age, your early middle age, you start to accumulate too much if you're on your way to Alzheimer's disease. And we want to find out what that moment is so that we can then give you a drug, there are some drugs in development right now, some very promising drugs, which would kind of like with cholesterol and statins, we'd identify that there's a little too much of this protein well before any symptoms. We would modulate the amount, we'd give you a drug to modulate the amount of beta amyloid. We'd keep it steady rather than let it increase and get out of control. And we'd stop the disease, even though the disease has started way, way before any symptoms occur, we would stop the disease before we even ever get to symptoms. Because once we get to symptoms, you're talking about actual damage to cells and to parts of the brain, which are very, very hard to undo, unfortunately.
Well, you're so right. I mean, when I got my diagnosis, you got cancer cells. You have cancer. With my cancer diagnosis, when I got my cancer diagnosis, you got cancer. You got cancer cells. All of a sudden, I'm a cancer patient. I still look the same. I don't feel anything. And yet, with Alzheimer's, it's you know, not until you trip over your shoes that someone is willing to accept that. And that's very damn frustrating and again, I can speak as a guy who's got both. I was diagnosed with cancer and 2 weeks later with Alzheimer's. So it wasn't a good week for me. But being the Irish guy, and I might have said this before, and I don't mean to repeat my jokes, but and most of them are bad, but it reminded me of the 80-year-old guy who went into the doctor who was afraid to go to doctors, so he stayed out and finally went in and had these tests, and the doctor came out and he said, "Geez, I got some bad news for you." And the guy said, "What?" He goes, "You got cancer." And he goes, "Oh my God!" And then he goes, "But it gets worse." He said, "What?" He goes, "You also have Alzheimer's." The guy said, "Thank God I don't have cancer." I'm sorry. I just trying to interject.
It may not be a great joke, but it's enough to get me to laugh. So
you heard me before about how upset I was about Bob, but life has to go on. And if you can't laugh at an enemy, the enemy owns you and intimidates you. And I'm not going to let this enemy intimidate me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have periods of time when I let my hair down, I cry, and then I get back up. And I just want to see more people marching. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I there are two things I want to do before I forget. I do want to get back. I want to ask you another question too about Bob, but I just want to also finish this point, because you were talking before about the indifference that a lot of people feel about Alzheimer's, or not so much indifference, but they understandably don't want to know about it unless they're kind of forced to. They want to kind of stay on the periphery, and they just want to, you know, they just want to acknowledge, you know, send a kind kind of expression your way and say, hope you're good, and kind of walk on.
And maybe some of it is because you can't remove a brain, you know?
Right.
You
can't remove a brain. But I think also a big part of it is when we talk about the public education, which is something that's so important to you, and that's what you're all about. That's why we're doing this, I've become convinced in my years of watching this, is that a big part of the public, what we can call public indifference to this, is that they really fundamentally think of it as this thing that really can't be treated. It's just this massive, overwhelming thing that happens to old people, and they don't think about it the way they think about cancer, which we know now can be treated. And in, you know, cancer is, there's been a revolution in cancer. It's many cancers have become chronic diseases that you can maintain and if not defeat completely, you can keep under control in some way for a very long time. And of course, heart disease has been transformed in our lifetimes. It used to be inevitable that it would happen to almost everyone, and that it would kill a person before we even knew you had it. And now we can detect it so early that it's well before symptoms, if you're taking the right tests and you're seeing the right doctors. And we've got some extraordinary drugs, statins and other drugs, that can then modulate the real dangerous levels of stuff that gets in there to clog up those arteries. And we can take a heart that might have died at age 50 and turn it into a heart that doesn't give out until age 110. And there's no reason, now that we know so much about Alzheimer's disease, those of us who are on the inside of the community, of the research community, and I'm including you, Greg, because I know that you know, you may feign ignorance, but you do know a lot about this stuff. Now that we know so much about this, there is no reason that we can't get to that same place with Alzheimer's, detect it super early, develop some fairly straightforward drugs that modulate the things that contribute to the disease, treat them very early, and just fundamentally, if not completely rid the world of this disease, then effectively bring it under a control the way we, you know, the way we have heart disease under control for so many people.
It's a matter of motivation. I mean, look at the incredible job that the women have done with breast cancer. God bless them. I mean, they got the NFL. They got, I mean, they're out there. And I've lost friends, women from breast cancer, and I had a very good friend of mine recently had a double mastectomy, and I will walk in any breast cancer walk, and I just think they've done an extraordinary job. But look at the visibility that they've raised, and we do have a lot of wonderful Alzheimer's walks, but it's not at the same level. But you're talking about a disease proportionately that is going to be the biggest killer, and a lot bigger killer now if Alzheimer's the pathology starts in your 40s, so when you have a cell, just like cancer, and we're looking at the diagnosis, which is after the fact, and we say there are 5 million people, and we're looking at all the people who are afraid to be diagnosed. How many people in this country and this world do you think have Alzheimer's right now?
Right.
If there was a way to understand it, I cut up a frog in high school, but this is on its way to being the biggest killer in our society.
Absolutely. And if we were to use the new nomenclature that I was describing before, you know, right now, the way we describe Alzheimer's, 5.5 million Americans have it. But if we were to say that in the proper way, that if we could detect it at its very beginning, and we were somehow able to see into the, you know, to detect the beta amyloid in all 300 or 350 million Americans, we would find tens of millions of Americans who are on their way to getting this disease and effectively have it just in the very, very earliest stages and just don't know that they have it yet. So you're absolutely right about how...
Just like cancer. I didn't know I had cancer until the doctor told me.
Of course.
Well, holy shit.
But Greg, I want to know... I would love to go back to Bob and hear... He also, it seems, or did he... I don't know if he made a decision to die of cancer rather than Alzheimer's, but I wonder how he felt if... I mean, this is kind of a gruesome question to ask, but I do think it's really interesting to get into the mind of someone who's going through this dilemma, you know, in themselves. And I wonder how he felt about dying of something, of cancer before Alzheimer's. Was there any aspect of that he considered a blessing?
I think in the end, when he decided to let go, he realized where he was heading. Bob and I talked about it. He talked about it with his minister too, Doug Scalise. It was a great guy. And I think Bob got to the point where he realized that he was at the end of the line and this was the best way out. And in that, it was a blessing. And I told that to Bob. I said, you know, we were having coffee, you know, a couple weeks ago. And his wife got up, because he wouldn't talk to his wife about stuff like this. And they were talking about, should he have the treatment or should not, and this and that. And he wanted to be strong for his kids. And given the background I have, I reached over to him. His wife walked away, and I said, hey, Bob, look at me. I said, you're in charge. We'll all take care of the family. You know what's going on inside. You make your own decision, and we'll support that down the line. And it's okay to go. And if you feel like going, I got nothing but praise for you. Mm-hmm. And I saw some tears coming down. And I knew at that point, that's where his head was. He just hadn't told the family yet.
Yeah. Well, he was lucky to have you as a friend, and I wish I'd known Bob. I wish you and I talked about having Bob on one of these podcasts, and it didn't happen, and we lost him before that could happen. I'm glad you shared that with me and with our audience,
Thank you for allowing me to talk about it. I hope it's helpful and edifying. It was cathartic for me, and I thank you.
Yeah. We'll sign off now, and next time we'll talk about something different. And I don't know that it'll be cheerier, but it will be.
Maybe your jokes will be funnier.
Of course. And well, now I need to. I'm gonna do a little prep work. I'm gonna have to get some joke writers in and get some better material. But let's go to the credits and let's dedicate this.
David, in the words of Bob, and I mean this from the heart, I love you, brother.
Yeah, love you too, Greg. Let's dedicate this episode to Bob, to your friend. That's it for our show today. Greg and I want to thank you for listening. At WCAI in Woods Hole, our engineer today was Elsa Partan. Thank you, Elsa. The Forgetting is a production of WCAI. Our producer is the great Sean Corcoran. Our theme music was composed and produced by Dr. Rudy Tanzi, who is, as you heard, also chair of the research consortium at Cure Alzheimer's Fund. Thank you, Rudy, as always. And Greg, the joke that keeps on giving, you do still owe me $100. Don't forget
I'm going to fax it to you right from here.
All right. Fair enough.